What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome the author, Dr. Angel Iskovich, and a physician. His new book is The Art of Routine, Discover how Routineology can transform your life. Angel's written it with his colleagues Joe Garner and Michael Ashley. Angel, I take you to your youth when you worked in ER at St. Francis Hospital in Santa Barbara. Every morning at 8 a.m., you started a routine that inspired you. What was it, and how did you respond at the time? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening. Yeah, thank you. And yes, that takes me back a little bit. And it's interesting because through medical school and obviously in doing emergency medicine, there's actually quite a bit of organization and structure in the work we do. But obviously, in emergency medicine, you never know what's coming through the doors. Essentially, you could be a little bit of an adrenaline junkie looking to really figure out which way you're going to treat patients, either cardiac, traumatic, or otherwise. But here I came to a Catholic hospital as one of my very first jobs, and it had quite a bit of tradition. And that tradition began with certain little things that they did that gave me a certain sense of certainty, a certain sense of stability, a sense that, and this is the point of a stable environment, to do this kind of erratic emergency medicine work. And that was that they would say a morning prayer most every morning, and it was always on time. And you always expected it throughout the day. And then even in the evening when you left, you knew that exactly on time, there was a saying, please leave quickly and quietly. Thank you for coming to the hospital. And similarly, there were situations where we knew whenever there was a newborn, there would be a chime, and it would bring in a sense of wonderment in the world. And these were the kinds of expectations that made for an environment in even caring for people that gave a certain sense of certainty, a certain sense of regularity. And I learned that became really the case for how we've evolved both as humans, where we find stability, and how these routines give us a sense of certainty, a sense of being able to find stability and kind of coordinate with how our bodies are. So that was an early finding in my work life.
I take you to Dublin, Ireland, Croke Park, a Rolling Stone concert, Mick Jagger himself, and you've discovered through a conversation with one of their road managers, routine that is necessary for men as senior figures who are extremely well-to-do, and yet the routine makes it possible for them to travel. What is a revelation here for everybody with an ordinary life about how Mick Jagger approaches his evening?
And, you know, well, surely you would think that artists often believe that creativity occurs more spontaneously, that it doesn't have organization, structure, or routine in order to perform. But actually, it's exactly the opposite. And I think the Rolling Stones, these septuagenarians that were traveling for almost now 55 years, being able to give consistently a high-quality performance in this regard, how does that just occur? Well, it's interesting. For them, they take with them that environment that I've spoken about that gives you stability and certainty. Their backstage is something that has exactly everything in the same place. It looks exactly the same. Their dressing rooms, where they're at, and all of the paraphernalia to give them a sense, regardless of where they're traveling, that gives them stability and a sense that they're somewhere where they feel comfortable in order to perform. And then what you find out that everything is played out almost to the moment when it came to the Rolling Stones. From the moment they arrive with their entourage to the time that they're ready to sign certain autographs to very specific timing in regard to that 9 o'clock when you're on stage, of that Mick Jagger, for example, would have 45 minutes exactly at 7:45 to warm up and then to do, audio and voice checks, and then to also practice his voice, to then gathering themselves together and to, so to speak, bust the crust, a tradition, a ritual that they had to assure that they knew they were going to do a good job in that regard. And then basically get a meat pie that they actually all would open and have a quick bite of to them before they began to perform. And I think that you start to see this in people that are high performers. I speak also of like Jeff Gordon and others in the book. When you start to see high performance, and particularly in those people that are a bit older in the sort, you see the importance of both the routine and the stability of environment. That was my finding also when I studied centenarians, people over 100 years of age, John, and they, that was where we were doing emergency medicine geriatric departments for people that were older. And that was the most common thread that I found, similarly to how high performers like the Rolling Stones are able to move forward. The common thread that I found was that they were in a stable environment, both physically, in physical sense, and emotionally, in support sense, and also that they did things regularly. They did things with a routine. But what they did varied. And that was the concept that the content of what we do, the activity that we do, may not be as important as when we do it, that we do it, in fact, regularly in the sort. And we certainly found some centenarians, for example, that are drinking things such as Dr. Pepper or at times alcohol, that it didn't seem that the content mattered as much. And so that was kind of the focus of how here we can travel. And you see this in high performers. You see how important traveling distinctly is important to be able to change time zones and let our bodies adjust for us to perform.
We go to Auschwitz-Birkenau, 1944. Your mother is a prisoner who has been condemned to work rather than be destroyed. And yet, routine will save her. She's in an environment that is Hades. And yet, because she was a skilled seamstress before her incarceration, and because she knew the machinery, it saved her. When you were born in Buenos Aires, did your mother tell you stories about how she shut out the horror around her and just did her sewing? Is that how it was for her, Angel?
It was, but there were many stories that were kind of held back into the later years. I think there was a significant amount of trauma in order to deal with this. It's what I sometimes call that you're with blinders in order to survive. Even in the emergency medicine where there's a lot of misery around you, in order to focus, you have to have blinders. But for her, it was always the sense of finding something that gave her meaning and purpose, something that she could do on a daily basis that allowed her to survive, even though people around her in these, you know, made up barracks with people who at night would come in and pick up people who have died. But I think this was what she noted, the ability to maintain yourself in some form of coherence during the day in order to somehow be able to sleep during the night, in order to have some meaning and purpose. And for her, she, as I tell the story in the book, it was her ability to have really learned the routine of how to do a seamstress work and how to actually take apart and put together a sewing machine in order to do her work. And being younger, she was tested at that, and she was able to actually perform it, which gave her a sense of work and a sense of meaning in order to survive with her sisters throughout Auschwitz.
You tell another story of incarceration, a POW in an Hanoi Hilton for thousands of days in an 8x8 cell. How did he survive?
Well, you know, Charlie Plum's story is amazing. He was in the Hanoi Hilton there with John McCain for over 8 years in essentially a small 4x4 cell, tortured, having his shoulders, in fact, disrupted and disengaged, and different types of torture at the time. And it was interesting when I spoke to him because I asked that, how did you survive? How did you actually find a sense of meaning and not be degraded? And so the story goes that one aspect of human behavior was the ability to have communication, and they developed a way of communicating among themselves within the cell and the sort so that they could, in fact, have a sense of meaning about others, having some sense of socialization, some sense of being essentially human. But here you are having to adapt into an environment, and not only your physical environment, but nutritionally into a way that you could not really easily survive without developing a sense of compatibility with your environment and a sense of adaptation and a sense of routine. And what was most difficult for him until I think Americans came by that Hanoi Hilton and sprayed the top of the roof, and luckily did not hit him, but made for some bullet holes where he was suddenly able to actually see the sun and see when it was day and night, and be able to now develop among that, so to speak, circadian rhythm, the ability to see the regularity of the world, that the sun rises, it sets, that the moon has its phases, even senses of seasons that were occurring, an ability to start making the routine of exercise, of eating within the constraints. This gave a sense of stability and the ability to survive, of also a sense of meaning and still purpose.
We go to the third century, the third millennium BCE, to Babylon. The god Marduk, the storm god, provided routine for the people of Babylon to work. How so, Angel?
Well, you know, often these types of routines, which go way back, are really the abilities to provide regularity, ritual, you know, so to speak, incentives, things that people can have certainty. And you see this really throughout not only early times in leaders that were trying to actually make people work, whether it was even the Medicis in the Renaissance period, which I don't think I spoke to too much in the book, developed the routines of having parades. They kind of invented parades, the ability to keep those people under difficult circumstances happy and having something to look forward to. And this is where these types of rituals, whether it's parades or holidays or even family and personal rituals that we develop, allow us to then survive as a culture and maintain, again, a stable and a sense of environment.
I'm speaking with Angel Iskovich, Dr. Angel Iskovich, a physician, with Joe Garner and Michael Ashley. The new book is The Art of Routine. Discover how routinology can transform your life. What we've been speaking to is time bubbles. And when we come back, what is a time bubble and how does it provide stability no matter the extremes of the environment? And I think we just gave you an extreme version of extreme. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Dr. Angel Iskovich, a physician, with his colleagues Joe Garner and Michael Ashley, publishing a new book, The Art of Routine. Discover how routinology can transform your life. They're euphemisms here, routine, ritual, tradition. But on how you introduce a concept, time bubble, what is that? How is it that we live in it, and is it a good thing?
Well, first of all, you know, what was most important as I spoke about both the stability of an environment and routine, which is something that you do in time, not necessarily what you do, which is the art of what you decide to put in what you do on a regular basis based on your life. We needed a little bit of a visual analogy. And I think we came up with the concept of time bubble in the sense that the bubble has flexibility. It can burst from either internal or external forces. And routine, the time, is what you do within that time bubble, something that gives you stability. And as I tell the story in the book, where I started to realize early on that the story related to an emergency C-section and understanding the stability of the womb that we're in and the routines that actually happen as we grow within the womb and finally come out into our lives, so to speak, burst the bubble, how we then go through life. And how our mothers care for us is in caring for our young, how we actually perform in life, how we go through life, is that we're always searching to find that stability. In the most simple sense, of that shelter, that food, that water, and that regularity of those things that we do that kind of coordinate with how we perceive life, whether it's the way our hearts beat with regularity, with our circadian rhythms in regard to our physiology or endocrinology occur, you see this occurring, whether you get into a deeper molecular pieces or systems of physiology in the body, such as gastrocolic reflexes and when you have to get ready to get to the bathroom and how that occurs, or postprandial tide after eating, why children and people sometimes become sleepy after eating. You start to see the sense of rhythm and the sort. But as we go through life, and I think in a life in attempting to survive, things happen that basically bust your bubble. They break your routine. They break your time. We've seen this in many different aspects, even recently, most recently, of course, with what's happened with COVID, which I kind of look at and think about somewhat like a war of sorts.
The time bubble you're talking about, and I certainly agree with you that the pandemic has felt like wartime conditions. The time bubble you're talking about strikes me as comforting. However, I want to know whether that's accurate. Does it bring everybody happiness to be in a routine, or are there limitations even to routinology, doctor?
Absolutely, because really the part of what's the art of routine is what you do within it. What activities you choose to do, what content you do. And humans, being naturally curious to survive, are always exploring not only new activities, new environments, and new ways of doing things. And therefore, often people ask me, say, well, routine seems to be quite boring. And I say, well, just change what it is you do if you're capable and circumstances allow you to do so. Change what you do. That's part of the aspect that I think is most important in modern day life, is that the sense that we're being interrupted and disrupted by all of the information and digital data that we're receiving from so many numerous sources, that they don't allow us to get into a stable environment, to do things with regularity. And that's kind of the focus of what I'm trying to portend. Not that what you do isn't important. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying that it may be more important than the kind of exercise you do, whether it's Tai Chi or walking or tennis or bicycling, or the kind of diets that are pumped upon us, whether it's the keto diet, or the South Beach diet or so forth and so on, that maybe we pay more attention to doing whatever it is we do more regularly because of our ability to be adaptive and move forward. So it's a good thing in today's life, and it's an aspect of our nature and how we progress and live our life.
You give one example, since I'm a routine, you give one, and I find it greatly comforting. You give one example, a man who works at Google, Max Hawkins, I believe his name is, and he recognized that he was in a routine that was predictable, and he sought to break out of it by doing what appears to be random events. Was he successful, doctor?
Well, he was successful in attempting it, but essentially what our bodies and our minds do, and there's quite a bit of science behind this, is they put us back into a routine. He developed an application that gave him randomness as what would he be doing today when he was in his day off. If you really think about Max, the time bubble that he was in within Google, the aspects of routine that were within them, the things that he did, the activities became really not satisfying to him. They didn't give him any happiness and contentment, which is a very important aspect of finding the kind of activity that you can do regularly and follow that gives you a sense of contentment and happiness. So he went on for a search to see if randomness would take him to a sense of happiness and contentment, only really to find that he had to begin to gravitate and choose the types of things that could get him back into a stable environment and into a regularity of routine.
Everyone listening to us, doctor, is coming out of the pandemic, and our routines were shattered. Our expectations were taken away from us. Is this a good time for us to reestablish the old ways, to find new ways? What do you recommend, given that we're still uncertain of ourselves?
Well, you know, it's been a very, very unique time. We obviously have had our environments disrupted and our routines disrupted, both
yes,
in the work, in the individuals, and in families. And we've began already a process of being adapted. One of the big issues is that over this period of over a year and a half, everyone by the knowledge and activities we know has become a viral threat.
Right.
So we've been doing something that's really unique in human times here. This doesn't happen whether you go back to 1918 or the first pandemic in Athens. You've never seen really the ability to have this kind of worldwide information structure and organization to basically keep humans away from each other.
We have a minute, We have a minute. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So having to shelter in place. And so what you've seen now is that we have to readapt ourselves into having others to not be a viral threat, both in our business and in our work lives. Yes, there will be, like a moonshot, some very interesting things that happen in the future from the virtual, from being able to do work virtually. We found some collateral value to all this collateral damage in how we work with our families, the importance of our environment. For example, today, home furnishings, home buying, people have now realized the importance of that stable bubble that is needed and have developed new routines. Very important today in both our work and individual lives that will surely make for some sustainable differences in the future.
The book is The Art of Routine. Discover how routineology can transform your life. Dr. Angel Iskovich and his colleagues Joe Garner and Michael Ashley. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.